Sir, I want to read you something.
I'm working, Marcella.
Dear Points High alumni, can you believe it's been 10 years since you left Grosse Pointe?
Don't tease me, you know what I do for a living.
I just honestly don't know what I have in common with those people anymore.
And what am I going to say? I killed the president of Paraguay with a fork. How have you been?
Go see some old friends. Have some punch. Visit with what's-her-name?
Debbie.
Don't kill anybody for a few days. See what it feels like.
I'll give it a shot.
No, don't give it a shot. Don't shoot anything.
I'm a pet psychiatrist. I sell couch insurance. I lead a weekend men's group. We specialize in ritual killings.
Hi, I'm Martin. You remember me?
Oh, I know who you are.
What'd I miss?
What, since you stood me up on prom night and vanished without a word? I'll come home.
Kid, I'm putting together a little concern.
You mean like a union?
Are you in trouble?
Not at the moment.
Welcome back, Pointers. You haven't changed a bit.
Don't say that.
What do you do, Martin?
Professional killer.
Oh, good for you. It's a growth industry.
Do you have to do postgraduate work for that, or can you jump right in?
There's a contract out in your life, but I'm not going to do it. It's either because I'm in love with your daughter or I have a newfound respect for life.
That punk is either in love with that guy's daughter or he has a newfound respect for life.
Debbie, I'm in love with you. But I know we can make this relationship work.
It's not easy for me. I always control my emotions. I just need time to change.
Why don't you just join the union?
This union, is there going to be meetings?
Of course.
No meetings.
All right.
I want you to think about this, and you don't have to answer it now. But Debbie, will you marry me?
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Film and Water Podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I am your host, Rob Kelly, and joining me on the show this week to talk about one of my favorite films, 1997's Grosse Pointe Blank, starring John Cusack and Minnie Driver, is our pal, the Sutherlands, Darren and Ruth. Hello, guys.
Hi, glad to be here.
Hi, Rob.
It's very exciting to have you on the show. Of course, anybody that listens to the network knows that Darren and Ruth do a bunch of podcasts. They do Warlord Worlds. They do Trekker Talk. So I'm really excited to have them on. And this was a movie that was on the list of films they wanted to talk about. And it was an immediate gimme for me because I love this movie. For anyone who hasn't seen it, John Cusack plays a sort of stressed out hitman named Martin Blank, who botches a job in the beginning of the film. And so to make amends to his mysterious employers, he has to go back and perform another hit, this time in Detroit, which is the location of his 10-year high school reunion. And sort of still there back in the old town is his ex-girlfriend, played by Minnie Driver, who he abandoned on prom night all those years ago and has never quite gotten over it. He's also under the care of his psychotherapist, Dr. Oatman, played by Alan Arkin. And there is another hitman named Grosser, played by Dan Aykroyd, who wants Martin to join a union of hitmen. Martin Blank wants nothing to do with that. And as he goes back to his old town of Grosse Pointe, he's got several different people trying to kill him as he's just trying to perform this one last hit before he can get out of the hitman game. Now, this is a movie that, at the time when it came out, didn't make a ton of money. It did okay, but it didn't set the world on fire. But it's the kind of movie that nowadays, if you've seen it, you love it. I don't know anyone that doesn't love this movie. Not that many. I don't know how many people have seen it, but those who have love it. Now, would you guys agree with that? I mean, I assume this was one of your favorites because it was on your list.
This is one of our absolute favorites. It's just pitch perfect in all of its delivery and everything it does. And I remember we saw advertisements for it when it was first coming out, and it just looked like exactly our type of film. So we went right out and saw it in the theater when we could.
Now, you say it's your type of film. What does that mean exactly? I'd like to know what's a Sutherland's type of film?
Well, you've seen our movie list, so that's impossible to.
It's very diverse, I will say. It's very diverse. Yeah.
It's varied, but I would say with this particular film, the actors we really enjoy, but the sense of humor, kind of the dry wit and dark humor that is underlying it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's the dry, witty humor in this movie. This isn't a laugh-out-loud comedy, but it's a smart, sort of tongue-in-cheek, dry wit, and it's just perfectly toned for us.
Yeah, I mean, the cast is amazing. As I mentioned, it's got John Cusack, who everyone loves, Minnie Driver, Alan Arkin, Dan Aykroyd, Joan Cusack, of course, John's sister, playing his sort of put-upon secretary, Hank Azaria, Jeremy Piven, Mitchell Ryan. I mean, a bunch of really, really funny people. And it's funny, you know, a couple of these characters already know each other, of course, as we talk about the fact that Martin Blank left Debbie on prom night all those years ago. But this group of actors has an enormous amount of chemistry. I mean, it sort of feels like this maybe is not the first film starring Martin Blank, the Martin Blank character. It is, but it doesn't necessarily feel that way just because everyone is sort of so in tune with each other's rhythms. It's an amazing group of people that they put together.
Absolutely. It's like you said, as far as the chemistry with everyone, I remember when we saw this movie and we liked it so much, we were sure that everyone in that film would go on and be huge stars and that this would be a huge hit. And like you said, it was, you know, it was a minor success. It made money, and certainly all of them have done other things, but John Cusack and Minnie Driver didn't become the superstars I really thought they deserved to be after seeing this movie, because they could just handle these roles so well. I just imagine them getting lots of work after this.
Now, I'm going to assume, Ruth, that you love John Cusack the way pretty much all women do.
Oh, yes. I'm still in the role.
Now, wait a minute, Rob. You figured out something that I didn't know yet. Back, Rob, to your mention of the cast list, and I know you know this, but we even have the rest of the Cusack family in this because John and Joan's other brother and other sister both have minor roles in it as well. So it was a family affair.
Yeah, that's right. His sister plays another one of their high school classmates who shows up drunk when Martin and Debbie are trying to sort of reconcile the relationship. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I never tire of watching John and Joan Cusack together. I mean, they are just such a delight. And she is particularly hysterical in the role of Marcella, the secretary,
Yes. Because
she's the one trying to get Martin to reconcile and go back to his hometown. And he wants nothing to do with it. And she's the one who's kind of nudging him. And, you know, he's a hitman, for Pete's sake. You would think you wouldn't piss the guy off, but she's so sweet about it that it's just utterly charming.
Yeah. It absolutely is. He's a different sort of hitman, that's for sure. A rather insecure one on some levels.
Yes, he sees a therapist on a regular basis. And the therapist, Dr. Oatman, is very reluctant to be seeing him, but is really having trouble turning him away from the door.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing a very Alan Arkin-y type here, very put upon. Martin keeps showing up, as you say, Martin keeps showing up at his office, and he's like, you're not my patient, Martin. You're not my patient. Stop. And he gives Martin advice anyway.
Oh, yeah. Very reluctant.
Right. He's under pressure. He's thinking, if I don't do a good job, you know, you're going to come knocking at my door one day.
He needs to see a therapist himself after having to work with him.
Yeah. And in terms of relationships, when he returns back to Grosse Pointe, he runs into his old pal Paul Spiricki, played by Jeremy Piven. And as most people know, John Cusack and Jeremy Piven are lifelong friends. They've known each other, I think, since high school. They've been in other movies together. They were in Say Anything together. They later did Serendipity after this. Those two have an amazing rapport. I mean, I really think Jeremy Piven's very funny, but these two are – you buy that they have known each other for all – even though there's this 10-year gap. And there's this great scene where they're driving around and they get a little stoned. And Paul cannot get over that he hasn't seen Martin Blank in 10 years. And he just keeps yelling, 10 years! Ten years!
We commented on that scene. We actually just rewatched the movie earlier today to remind ourselves some of this stuff. So we actually were laughing at that scene earlier. It is amazing, like you said, how the chemistry is in this movie with everyone together. They do seem so realistic, like they all know each other. The people that they know that they don't particularly like, they react to them exactly the way you would expect people to react when they're having to face someone that, I don't really care for being around this person. So it's all just perfectly done.
Yeah, and Debbie Newbury, I think, as a character, is a very interesting female protagonist. In a lot of these movies, the female protagonist is kind of, I don't know, she's a character seen mostly through the eyes of the male protagonist. That tends to be the way these things are written. But she seems to me a very fully formed character. character. Part of it is I love Minnie Driver. I just love Minnie Driver. But she seems
absolutely.
She seems, you know, like a unique individual with her own idea. I mean, there is stuff to her that I think she is just a much more well-rounded character than you would typically get in a sort of rom-com action comedy made by Walt Disney Pictures. She's a unique individual. She really is. And I don't think I'm the only person that when, spoiler alert, when they drive off together at the end of the movie, I wanted to see them have more adventures together.
Yes, it looked like a setup perfectly for a sequel.
Yeah, that's right. She could be his new assistant as he tries to find other work. But that's one of the things this I remember hearing the director talk about is he kept cutting the script on this movie and trying to shorten it because it just seemed too long to him. And then he would get on set and they would ad-lib so much stuff that it was longer than the script ever was to begin with. And you have to wonder with Minnie Driver, because you're right, is the character was well written, but at the same time, her performance gives it so much more depth. And then you also have to wonder, you know, what input she might have had if she did any of that ad-libbing as well to try to give her character a little more depth, especially some of those scenes when she has John Cusack on the spot.
Right.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because the scene where Martin shows up at her house and he opens the door and she doesn't kind of want to see him, and she's first of all, she's talking in a Jamaican accent for no real discernible reason. And she says to him, "You can't come in." And when she talks to him, she's moving her hand like in a Kermit the Frog kind of motion for no reason. And then I read about later, the reason she did that is that she saw that was the thing that John and Joan Cusack did together, was they did this little hand gesture. And so she just copied it and put it in the movie. And,
oh, that's fantastic.
And, yeah, it's all the, and like when you see, she finally does let Martin in, and then she jumps into bed and she's being very playful with him. You see laying on the bed, there's like a ViewMaster with some, yes, ViewMaster reels, like just these little details. I'm like, there's a grown woman playing with ViewMasters all by herself. Right. I love all that.
Ruth's a grown woman who likes ViewMasters. Oh, so she always notices that scene.
I remember those fondly. And I love the soundtrack for the film as well. Selection of, you know, very 80s sounding music. And then, of course, it ties into Debbie being a DJ at the local radio station. Fits so well and works so well together.
And I think that, like you were mentioning, she's doing the Jamaican accent. I think the song that's playing in the background in her house is a Jamaican group, if I remember right.
The Specials, I think, or something like that is playing in the background.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, perfectly, you know, perfect segue into it. And I like the way, and you did such a good Jamaican accent as well.
Yeah, sure.
I'm trying to copy it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Part of the chemistry and the talent, it just feels so spontaneous. You really believe that that's how they are reacting in the moment, and you're really there, you know, along for the ride.
Well, and I know we're, as you said, we're all over the place already, but that's the way the show goes, and that's part of the fun. But that's what I was thinking about, too, as Ruth was saying that, sort of the spontaneity of it, because it's so funny. One of my favorite parts of the movie is the fact that John Cusack, since he's going to be back in his hometown, it's going to be his reunion, he keeps practicing what is he going to tell people that he does.
Right.
Because, you know, he thinks he can't tell them what he does for real. So he keeps practicing things he'll tell them. And then in front of everyone that he meets, he really tells them what he does for a living.
He just spontaneously
says that. Everybody just, like, laughs it off. But you find that he's really a very honest person. He's telling everyone, right, I'm an assassin.
He told Debbie. He told his best friend. He told Debbie's dad.
Right.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, when he tells Paul, Paul's like, can you just get into that? Is that an open market kind of business? I mean, nobody takes him seriously. Yeah. Yeah, there's really wonderful interaction between these characters, everybody, and even the small characters, like the two federal agents that are tasked with chasing down Martin, are played by Hank Azaria and this guy named K. Todd Freeman, who I'm really not familiar with. But, like, they have a great little rapport. They even have, like, a little dynamic. They talk about, you don't know him, but he keeps talking about how he's run into Martin Blank before. And Hank Azaria keeps saying, no, you haven't. You know how I know? Because I read the file. Why don't you? We always got to know everybody. Like, these two have a dynamic before they ever enter the movie. And they're just these little side guys, which is fantastic.
That's right. Their total screen time is probably 5 minutes if you edited it all together. And yet they make themselves completely three-dimensional, and they're interesting every time they're on screen.
Yeah, I mean, when they see Martin and Debbie finally show up at the reunion, the other G guy, Kenneth, goes, she looks really nice. Like, she's sort of, like, impressed that she's dressed up.
And I love it when they have their conversation about what makes them good guys versus the bad guys that they're trying to kill themselves. That's a classic line. You can just imagine, you know, that's almost an Abbott and Costello, but a little more subtle. just the way they're talking back and forth about how do you define this?
Yeah, we're the good guys because we wait for the bad guy to kill the other bad guy. That makes us good guys. So wait a minute, if we kill the bad guy before he kills the other bad guy, we're the bad guys. Yeah. I mean, for a goofy comedy, there is a lot of sort of thematic stuff going on, and that I have to feel that comes from John Cusack himself. He seems to be like a fairly thoughtful guy, and I mean, because there is a whole scene after Debbie discovers that Martin is in fact a hitman, and she discovers him with the blood on his face after he stabbed the assassin in the neck with a pen, which is fantastic. It's a great action scene too for a silly comedy. It's a really, really good scene. But like, she has it out with him in his hotel room, and she's talking about killing people, and he's like simultaneously trying to excuse his own behavior but also saying, look, there's no countries anymore. It's all just PR. We're all just a bunch of corporations that are doing things to one another. And that's, you know, that's hinting at something fairly dark in this really kind of sunny movie.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. And it's interesting, like you talked about how good that fight scene is as well. The actor that he's fighting with there in the hallway in that school was actually his kickboxing instructor. So he did that for fun or hobby or exercise. And then for this movie, he got his instructor this part. So I guess they were practicing their moves and so that they could learn for this film. But another thing, I don't know, have you seen, Rob, the quasi-sequel War Incorporated?
I have.
Oh, okay, good. Because I liked what you were just talking about the seriousness of that conversation within this movie. And certainly he plays that element up even more in War Incorporated, you know, really to the point maybe of a bit of caricature. But again, he's commenting on that same theme again. It's really interesting.
It broke my heart a little to hear John Cusack call War Inc. a sort of unofficial sequel, because I like to think that Martin Blank grew out of his hitman lifestyle at the end of this movie. And if he didn't, if he's the character in War Inc., then he's worse off than he ever was before. And I don't want to think of it that way. I like to think that him and Debbie went off and had a better life together. But yeah, I mean, it's got, that movie has John Cusack, Joan Cusack, and Dan Aykroyd. And it's about a guy who was sort of a former hitman now running guns. So, I mean, you really do sense the thematic similarities.
I'm with you on Rob. I like that interpretation. So Debbie and Martin get to go off into the sunset and have a wonderful life. And then this other film was, you know, great, different entertainment,
yeah,
but not connected.
I like to think of it as a not a real sequel, but a thematically. But yeah, because this movie, you really do want to imagine that just as they drive out of Grosse Pointe, they drive out into another life that they both deserve better than what they've had.
Yeah. Before I forget this, I did want to mention when he brought up the guy playing the assassin who was John Cusack's real-life kickboxing partner. I love when Joan Cusack's character first mentions him to mentions to Martin that this guy is on his trail, and his name is Felix La Poubelle. Apparently in French, Poubelle means garbage can, which is a good detail. And she's reading his fact sheet, and she's reading his hobbies, and she's like, he's into ballroom dancing, pornography. And then Martin Blank goes, oh, I know that guy, he's an asshole.
You know, Joan Cusack, I don't know, does she ever even leave that one set? I think she's only ever in that one set, and yet she brings so much life to her character. I mean, every line she delivers. I love the scene when he comes back at early in the movie, and after that second assassination he's assigned goes wrong as well, the one that's inspired by the James Bond film. But I like it when he comes back and he's trying to, you know, go away in his office and just be left alone, and she keeps walking back and forth in front of the door with her little files.
Yeah.
Just looking in. Just like, it's such a small office. How can you pretend to ignore someone?
Yeah. And she's dressed in like this oddly formal gear, and he calls her Sergeant Pepper at one point, and yeah.
My favorite lines.
Yeah. Look, Sergeant Pepper. He just sort of pauses a little. You know, it's funny, Ruth, you mentioned the soundtrack, and yeah, this is the soundtrack itself was a huge hit, probably a bigger hit comparatively than the movie was. I think it had actually spawned a sequel. There was like a Grosse Pointe Blank 2 soundtrack. But yeah, the use of music in this is amazing. There really aren't any songs here that you would expect to hear in sort of a major movie. And there is a scene where back at the high school reunion where Martin runs into an old classmate who is married and has a baby, and she's almost glowing with happiness, with sereneness. And she's talking to Martin, and she hands Martin her baby. And, you know, he says, oh, I hear that, life's pretty hard when you're married. And she says, no, it's great. Life just keeps getting better. Like, she's an amazingly sunny person, which is a wonderful contrast to Martin, who is dressed in all black and is sort of this grim guy. So the scene where she hands him her baby to hold for a moment, and that's when they cue up Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie. Yes. And I'm not a fan of movies where, like, the main character gets sort of readjusted in life because he sees a cute baby or something that seems so hacky, but this scene works like gangbusters. I mean, the combination of the shot of the baby, the shot of Cusack as he sort of stares at it in wonder, and the use of the song behind it is pitch perfect.
You're absolutely right, Rob. That is a great scene. I'm like you, Ruth is too, because we commented on that scene when we watched it earlier. That's not typically the type of scene that we would like because, as you said, it just seems a bit too trite. But at the same time, with this film, it's, again, John Cusack's performance, because his facial expression changes as his eyes get larger and larger as he stares at that baby. It becomes almost to the point that you can think of a movie like 2001, you know, as he's staring at... Isn't that amazing?
The star child.
But a great scene.
Yeah, it's really, really, really very wonderful. And it they hold it just enough. And I said that character, the woman that he runs into, is really, it's a very small part, but she's tremendous because you just, I don't know, they just didn't oversell it. And if that is the thing that sort of provides Martin a chance to you know, sort of think of a new life, you know, to consider a new life at that point. I do want to mention, we mentioned briefly, but I want to get into Dan Aykroyd, because I love Dan Aykroyd, and he is hysterical in this movie. He quotes the Bible throughout, which is similar, I guess, to his character in Ghostbusters, who could quote the Bible. His character, Grocer, is a guy who's running a hitman union, and he wants Martin to join. Martin is not interested. Grocer will not take no for an answer. So this is a guy who seems to be entertaining himself a lot of times. There's this point where he's trying to scare Martin, and he just goes, pop, 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 popcorn! And Martin just sort of stares at him, and no one knows. I don't know what that means. It's just odd. It's just an odd thing that this guy is doing.
His scenes, again, a rather small part. I mean, he's in it throughout the film, but his scenes are all short and they're, you know, dispersed. But his opening scene with him and, well, not the opening scene with the botched job at the beginning, but the scene when he and Martin first talk, and, you know, they're connected by phone and they're both pretending they're in completely different parts of the world. And they're driving, you know, toward each other and getting out and starting to talk to each other. That's, again, another one of my favorite scenes. There's so many in this film. But he does such a great job in that when he's trying to sell this union to John Cusack. And he's saying, well, everyone's on board. And John Cusack keeps saying, but I'm not. He's saying, but everyone is.
Yeah,
but I'm not.
And it's not a union. It's a club.
Yeah, and he's like, who else is in? Oh, those Stabby sisters and all these other hitmen that we've never heard about. Yeah, it really is. It's a movie that feels like a sequel to some other movie we haven't seen, but in some cases that wouldn't work, but this really does. Everybody is just so in tune with one another. And one other thing that I do want to mention before I sort of drift off, because I tend to do that on the show, is one of the things I like about this movie is that it does not underestimate the audience's ability to follow something. And the scene I think about when I say that is when they are following Martin and the two government agents are in the bathroom and they're waiting for Martin. And Martin comes in and he washes his hands and he combs his hair and he knows they're government agents and they know he knows they're government agents, but they're all just pretending. And he finally says, I'm going to take Debbie home and then I'm going to go to my hotel room. You might want to follow me. I'll be there in 10 minutes. Now, waiting in the bathroom stall is Grocer. And Grocer is pretending that he's not there. So he's got his feet up on the stall because he doesn't want Martin to know he's there. Martin leaves. Grocer comes out and they talk to Grocer a little. And then basically just to get rid of Grocer, one of the G-men says, oh, no, he's coming back. And Grocer runs in back into the bathroom stall. And Hank Azaria looks at the other one like, is he really coming back? And the other guy like waves his hand. No. And it's just silent. And Grocer eventually figures out that they're bullshitting him. And he's like, God damn it, you guys. And it's like, if you're not paying attention to that scene, you're going to miss that joke entirely because it goes by in a heartbeat and there's no dialogue. I love that the movie is filled with jokes like that where it's like you really have to be paying attention.
Yeah, and you really do throughout. And the thing is you can watch this movie one time and you can laugh all the way through it and enjoy it. But it is so rich with so many scenes like that you pick up more every time you watch it. And, you know, Ruth and I watched it twice recently, you know, in preparation for this, and it doesn't get old. You laugh just as much each time at all the same things and at other things that you say, oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
You notice more things along the way.
It's just such a rich film. There's so much buried in it.
Yeah, they give every little character, even a joke line. I mean, when Martin and Grocer go to get breakfast together and they order eggs and Martin says, I want an omelet. And the waitress is like, what do you want in it? And he goes, nothing. And she says, well, that's technically not an omelet. And he's like, look, I'm not here to have a semantics argument. I just want the protein. And then later she delivers it and she calls it the Nada omelet. And I'm like, they give the waitress a little bit of a gag line. Like, I'm like, that's just good writing. And now's the perfect time to mention it. This film was written by John Cusack, his partners Steve Pink, D.V. DeVincentis, and Tom Jankowitz. And these were all buddies, and they went on to write other movies together. And so I wish they had done more movies together, because they did High Fidelity, which is another movie I love. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, these guys really, I mean, obviously Cusack's writing his own screenplay. He's going to have an insight, but these guys really seem to know how to write Cusack type dialogue and what works for him. And like I said, I think it's just a really, really solid screenplay.
Yes. And he makes so much out of this film. I mean, these are the types of films that, you know, I think John Cusack should be, you know, lead in so many other films, because he can pull them all so well. I mean, he certainly works nonstop, but I mean, I'm always surprised that he's not a huge name like some, you know, like a George Clooney, for instance, even, because he's so good and there's so much depth to his performances.
Yeah, it's a really, really wonderful movie. I don't know. I could just keep going on and on about Gross Point Blank, but, you know, people should just watch it if they haven't seen it. I guess as we wrap up, like, do each of you guys have, like, a particular favorite scene that you want to mention before we sign off?
I'll share one. So I love, you know, as Martin is going around town, you know, visiting some of his old haunts and getting re-familiar with his town and his whole high school and everywhere, and then he decides he's going to see his childhood home where he grew up. Pulls up and he is stunned, he's confused, he's looking all around like, where is my house? And it's been turned into a convenience market.
So his
house, right, his house was leveled, it was gone. He goes into the store, he's obviously upset, he's questioning the cashier.
What are you doing here?
Yes. Pacing around, and then he gets on the phone and calls his therapist and says, you can never go home again, but I guess you can shop there.
And I love that scene too. And one of the things I love the most about that scene is they're playing Live and Let Die as he arrives.
Right.
And it's in a rock version of it, not the original Paul McCartney version.
I think it's the Guns N' Roses version they're playing.
You're absolutely right. And so they're playing that. And as he walks inside, and then as soon as he walks through the doors, it cuts to a Muzak version of the same song. At the same time. It's just like, that's exactly what's happened to his life at that point in time. That is a great scene. I've named so many of mine already. I'm trying to think if I have another one, but I don't think I have another one right now.
I'll add another one.
You're going to add another one. She's going to fill in on my behalf. Okay.
Didn't you love it when Debbie and Martin meet at the radio station and like she puts him live on the radio show while he's trying to explain, you know, and ask forgiveness, and he just wants to show up and reconnect with her.
The thing I love the most about that scene is he turns and he closes the shades on the little tiny window behind him, even though there's a huge window in front of him. It's like, what's the point? So I know, as like you said, we're starting to wrap up. It's just interesting to, as good as this film is, and it's so much about, you know, Detroit and Grosse Pointe, and yet I found it really interesting in researching that the city of Grosse Pointe wouldn't let them film there because they didn't like all of the references to drugs and alcohol. And, of course, a movie about an assassin who came from their town. So they wouldn't let him film there. So the only scene that's filmed is the one of him driving into town and driving out of town, because they could film it from an aerial view. And so that's the only time you actually see the real city. So
what a bunch of spoil sports.
It's a shame. So, because it's such a part of the film. But yeah, their loss. we get to enjoy the film.
I guess, like I said, there are so many scenes I think are great. I think maybe not my favorite one, but there's one that we quote around the house all the time is when, again, we're giving it away, but who cares? You should see it anyway. And I bet everybody listening to this has seen it, is when it's when Martin Blank is, you know, doing the last hit over back at Grosse Pointe, and he calls Marcella, tells her, and as we cut to her, she is destroying the office. She's pouring gasoline on things. She's smashing the hard drive with a hammer. And he's like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "I'm taking down the office." And "Look, let me finish all this up and then I'll find you." And she's like, "What does that mean?" And he goes, no, don't worry about that. It's a good thing. And then he goes, "Look under the desk." And she reaches under the desk and she pulls out a brick of cash taped up in like a plastic bag. And it looks like it looks like it weighs 20 pounds.
Right.
And she looks stunned. And he goes, "It's profit sharing. You deserve it." And hangs up on her. And then you just cut to her going, "All right!" And she's cheering in there. And that's it. She's done for the movie at that point. It's like, I want to follow the Marcella story at that point. You know, I want to follow her too.
Absolutely. And that scene has so much in it as well. Because she's slinging gasoline all around the office while she's smoking a cigarette.
And you get the sense that their office is inside of another building.
Yes.
You know, it's not like it's a freestanding building. So what is she doing? Is she going to set fire to the, you know, so.
I believe so.
Yeah. So these are all, every person that enters into this movie story is a real person that has a backstory. And you know that their life continues on after they exit the movie, whether it be Marcella. Well, not so much the G-Men, because we know what happens to them. But, you know, Paul, the father, Debbie, and Martin, Martin's teacher that he runs into, who has one scene, Martin's mother, who is in some sort of home for mentally disturbed people. These are all real people, and that's hard to do in a broad comedy. And I think that's why this movie just remains one of my all-time favorites. And it's a movie that I showed Darlin' Tracy a couple of years ago. And she loves it. Like, she had never seen it before. And then, so it's a movie that we watch regularly because it's just, you laugh and it just sort of makes you feel good that you see something so entertaining, so funny, and so rewarding, no matter how many times you watch it.
A very good point. And I know you've said it several times, but I just want to reiterate, if there's anyone who hasn't seen this, they really must, because they'll be much happier for having seen this.
Absolutely. I think that's going to do it for Grosse Pointe Blank. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, I think so.
Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed having you guys on. I really do appreciate it. Before we sign off, of course, where can people find you guys on the interwebs?
Oh, yes. Well, please do. We do two podcasts, as you mentioned earlier, Trekker Talk and Warlord Worlds. For those who don't know, Trekker Talk, we cover Ron Randall's Trekker comic series from its inception in 87 all the way through the current weekly updates. And we would love for people to come and join us and listen in on that. We always do a What's Up section in that show where we sort of talk about other things that we do as well. So it's a great opportunity to get to know other things that we like if people are interested. And then write in and send us some feedback, because we love sharing other people's point of view about Ron Randall's Trekker and his other comics. We cover his other comics as well, like Star Wars and Supergirl. And we just cover Justice League for the Batman v Superman.
And I would add, for anyone out there who's a fan of the work of Mike Grell, try out Warlord Worlds. Right now, we are covering issues of The Warlord, John Sable, and Green Arrow in every episode. And then we try to fit in some other stories. So, for example, right now, we're covering Starslayer miniseries. Having a lot of fun reading that.
So just look for our site. You can go to trekkertalk.com and warlordworlds.com. There you can find links to iTunes and Stitcher and Facebook and Twitter, everywhere we are.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, these are great shows. Warlord Worlds, like I said on my iTunes review, what a great idea for a show to pick a creator and follow him through all of his creations. There must be other shows like that, but I don't know of any. I think that's such a neat idea of just not limiting it to a book or a series, but picking a creator and going through his whole creative life. That's a really neat idea.
We're trendsetters.
Thank you. We're really enjoying doing it.
You are trendsetters. That's always a good thing. So, yeah, for us, of course, if you want to comment on the show, you just go to the website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can leave a comment there, or you can send me a message via the contact page there. You can follow the show at the Twitter feed, which is @FilmAndWaterPod, and please use the hashtag FW Podcasts. So, Ruth, Darren, thank you so much for being on the show. I really, really appreciate it. It's always, you guys have been such a great supporters of what we've been doing over at the network for so many years, and it's really been enjoyable having you on.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Rob. We had a lot of fun.
Thank you, Rob.
Everybody, thanks so much for listening, and until the next episode, that's a wrap.
What are you doing here?
I'm doing a double shift. What's it look like?
How long have you worked here?
A couple months.
Yeah? Is the manager here? Do you have a supervisor?
No, that...
How long have they worked here?
I'm not telling you.
Yeah? Where do you live?
I'm not telling you that either.
Where's your manager live? Who? I used to... What are you doing here?
What are I
you,
work here.
What are you doing here?
I work here.
And how long have you worked here?
Only a couple months.
All right. What's done is done. Just forget about the whole thing.